Eugene.
Next time you go to the apartment, it will
welcome
be
to Eugene.
It will be?
Yes.
Very interesting.
It isn't yours yet.
That's not a good boy.
It's 5 o'clock. I'd like to thank everybody for being here today. We'll start off the committee with just committee introductions very briefly, let you know where the members of this committee are from. We'll start with the Honorable Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I represent House District 11 in the legislature, which is mostly east and north of here. And I appreciate the chair's indulgence allowing me to sit in on the committee tonight. It looks to me like you've got plenty of people offering testimony, and I do not expect to speak again, but I do expect to be listening carefully to the testimony that's given. Thank you, sir.
I'm Representative Steve March from House District 46. It's in the center of Portland. It's always good to be back in Eugene, and I'm not really running for statewide office, but I say that anyhow. So thank you.
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is northwest Portland, all the way north to North Plains, a city, suburban, and rural district, and I'm always pleased to be in Eugene. I have very pleasant memories of coming here to visit my daughter when she was in school here.
And I'm State Representative Paul Holvey. I'm from District 8, which is just to the south of the railroad tracks right here. And it is good to be back in Eugene. Just got off the freeway, so it's nice to be here and see some familiar faces in the crowd.
Oh, my turn. Kim Thatcher. I'm from Kaiser. I represent Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, and actually do get to visit my daughter in school today, so I'm excited about that.
My name is Debbie Farr, and I represent District 14 in the House of Representatives, which is a little bit of northwest Eugene, Santa Clara, Bethel, Danabo, Junction City, Cheshire, and Alvador. And I'm happy to be back in Eugene as well. And I actually was a student at the University of Oregon, and I decided I liked it so much I'd just stay.
I'm Billy Dalto. I'm the state representative for Oregon's 21st House District in Salem. Thanks for having us.
And I'm the chairman, Derek Kitts from House District 30, Hillsboro. So I've got to confess, it's probably my first time in the city of Eugene. So,
but not the last.
I've driven through. I usually just stop at Corvallis and never make it all the way on down, which is why we have the officer in the back today. Now, again, thanks for everybody for coming here today. We're going to go a little bit out of order on our agenda because it appears that House Bill 2583 probably has the most interest. So in the interest of time, normally what the procedure has been is we divvy up the bills, just divide it by the amount of time that we have, and then go pros and cons so that everybody gets equal time and each bill gets equal testimony. Seeing that there are so few to testify on House Bill 2551 and Senate Bill 162, I'd like to get those out of the way if the committee would indulge me on that, and then we can divvy up the remainder of the time and then open up any extra time for other discussions as related to elections issues. So if I have the indulgence of the committee, we will do that. At this time, I would like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 162. Call forward, I believe it's S.J. Ferguson. And if the clerk at this time will read the bill summary, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair and committee, guests, Senate Bill 162 requires all elections held in the state of Oregon to be conducted by mail, deletes references to voting machines, polling place clerks, etc., from the Oregon Revised Statute, primarily from the OSR, Chapter 2154.
Right. Is Mr. or Mrs. Ferguson here? Mr., please come forward. Welcome. If you could just state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Stuart Ferguson, and I live here in Eugene. And during the last election, I was the integrity manager for the election office down here and saw the election firsthand at that point.
Great. What would you like to say about Senate Bill 162?
Well, I'm not really in favor of elections by mail. I never felt that there was any problems with elections from the usual procedure where you went to a local school or whatever to be checked in by the officials and to show who you were. You were on a list, you were checked off, you made your you did your voting, and you came away, and everything was very sort of cleanly done. The election by mail seems to me to be, in Eugene, done primarily for convenience, so the people don't have to come down to the election office sometimes during that November period. Weather is bad, so people don't want to come out, and that's one thing, but it's a convenience, certainly. But I do think there is many areas for fraud and problems outside the election office. I will say that, as I observed in the office, things were run pretty well. I see the lady here today who was in charge of the office, and she did a very good job in following the rules. There were some areas that I have questions about, but that's another issue. But the idea that you can send a ballot in, the only checking that's done as the ballot comes in is the signature. And most signatures, a good percentage of them, were, in fact, compared with the signature on the registration card, so they were okay, but there were some that were questionable and some that weren't good. But that comes down to a decision that somebody's got to make to find out if that person was a registered voter or not. So I think there's a lot of things that might have gone on outside the election office before they even reached the ballot box that are very areas of very those problems. I've never lived in a state before where they had that, but I don't know. It's very much easier for the personnel at the election office to be able to handle it that way because they don't have to leave. All the ballots are brought to them, and they deal with it right there. So it makes their job a lot easier. And I know it takes a lot more people and a lot more work to get voting polling booths set up. But I think that in the long run, to me, it's a more fairer method of doing it, and there's a lot less chance of something going wrong.
Committee, are there any questions? Yeah. Representative Holby.
Yes, thank you for coming and testifying today. And I'm just curious, you know, you mentioned these problems outside the area. Are you aware of any specific integrity issues that are any specific violations or anything that caused you this concern?
Not that I was completely aware of, no. Not this time. I heard in previous elections there were things that went on that were very bad. We had observers at every polling, at every drop box, I should say, so that people weren't stuffing, you know, invalid votes in there, ballots in there. But I've heard in the past that was a problem. I did not see, as I must say, that I did not see anything going on in the election office that made me suspect. But there is so many areas that need to be looked at carefully before, as I say, it even gets to the election office, that need to be looked at. So I just feel better with a voting situation where you are listed, you are a registered voter, you show your proof of who you are, you make your vote, and you go home. And in states where people who were too old to drive there or weather was bad or they had some problem, there were enough volunteers around to be able to come and pick them up and take them to the polling booth and take them home. So that didn't seem to be a factor.
Representative Greenleg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had 86.48% of the registered voters voting in the election, which was by far the highest number voting, I think, anywhere in the country. Do you think helping citizens exercise their right to vote by making it easier for them to do is a value, and how much of that value would you trade off for?
Well, I don't know what you mean by easier. I think it's a citizen's responsibility to vote in this country. I come from a country where it's always been like that in England, and I think people who come here and become citizens and grown up here have a responsibility to vote, and they should look upon that election day as a very special day in their life, and they should go and vote. The fact that it's easier to drop it in the mail. Now, there are, I mean, you should have absentee ballots, obviously, if people are traveling or they're abroad or some other reason. You should be able to have an absentee ballot, which they drop in the mail. But this is the whole state's absentee ballot, really. So I don't think that's a valid reason, really.
Thank you. Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is just a quick, easy one, because you mentioned you originally were from England. Do you carry a copy of your naturalization card on you?
No.
Thank you.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
You were not.
I used to carry it with me for some years,
but
until
you know.
There's no need to carry it anymore.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Alto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question I wanted you to clarify. At the beginning of your testimony, you said that you were the elections integrity manager, and I wasn't sure what that meant, so I wanted to get more information about that.
To observe the election process down there and make sure that it was supposed to go as it did, and it did well. They did very well.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Is that a program then, an elections integrity project as a whole, or...
Both parties had people, observers, at the election office during the election to make sure that things were done according to Hoyle, or according to the way they should be done. And they were carried out. So,
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So you were one of the managers for one of the parties?
I was.
Okay. And then, and out of curiosity, you described a situation where you were wanting to see people monitoring the ballots that were being delivered to drop-off sites and evaluating whether or not they were legitimate ballots at the drop-off sites. Could you talk about that? Because I guess I'm wondering how you would be able to separate valid ballots from invalid ballots by watching somebody...
At a drop-off place?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You misunderstood me. I didn't mean that. I meant on the election day, we had observers at every... drop-off box around the state, around the county, Lane County, and that was primarily to make sure that there weren't any last-minute shenanigans going on where somebody would shove a whole lot through there. Also, at 8 o'clock, the election closes, and at 8 o'clock, there are to be no more ballots put in that ballot box. So we had people there watching that at 8 o'clock, that was stopped, and it worked, and everybody stopped. There was an officer or an official there at every box. It was one of each party there, by the way, too. It wasn't Republicans or Democrats. And if anybody came up after 8 o'clock, they were, and they couldn't put it in the box. The official would say, I will take your ballot from you, and would take it from them, and wouldn't say to them, obviously, to start a confrontation that you are too late to vote. He would take the ballot, but that vote would not be counted. But they would have vouched. It will go on their record for next time that they did vote, but their vote was not valid for this election. And we wanted to make sure that at 8 o'clock throughout the state, things went according to the book, and they did.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson.
Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Representative Thatcher.
Yes, thank you. You mentioned that outside of the elections office there were areas of problems. Was it just the drop sites, or was there something else that you were trying to address?
Well, there were other problems. It's nothing to do with the election process. I mean, it was part of a campaign, but I don't want to get into that now. It's not relevant to this discussion.
When you say there's a lot of ballots going into the box, people would gather up, I don't know, maybe down here, a dorm room's worth of ballots and take them down. Would that not be a valid activity?
Well, you kind of hate to see that on election night, to see someone come in and stuff 50 ballots in a box or something, you know. So we were there to observe what was going on, to make sure that it was a normal procedure, and it pretty well was around Lane County anyway that we noticed. There's a lot of other issues, with the registration. It's not this discussion, but there are a lot of things that happened that are bad. I had reason to discuss the election with Dino Rossi over the weekend, who is in the Washington State at the moment, and he was telling me about a lot of things that went on up there that shouldn't have happened and that are going to be brought out into the public arena pretty quick. But that's got nothing to do with the polling.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions?
I just have one quick follow-up to Representative March's question. You said you don't currently carry your naturalization card, but if asked to provide it, could you?
I could. It's irrelevant because I'm now a citizen, so it's not an issue.
Thank you. I think that concludes. Thank you very much for your testimony. This time we'll call forward Mrs. Eleanor Mulder. And if I butcher someone's name, I apologize in advance. Just correct me when you come up to the microphone.
My name is Eleanor Mulder, and I live in Eugene. I'm speaking for the League of Women Voters of Lane County. The League has, for a long time, been in favor of vote by mail, and therefore we approve of codifying Senate Bill 162, because it would remove what apparently is obsolete language as far as punch card ballots, etc. One of the things I think all of us need to remember, that because I think of vote by mail, we had an outrageously high voter participation this past election. And, of course, we didn't have the problems that many of the states had with some of the peculiarities of their voting machines and whatnot. That also harks back to what the previous gentleman talked about when we had a combination, and this really isn't about precisely about ballot measure 160, Senate Bill 162, but when we had both systems, you remember the expense of running two different elections. You remember the delays because we had to cross check. So that is one of the things about having vote by mail only. We've gotten rid of that problem that we had earlier. And of course, we didn't have the problems that many of the states had, that where they couldn't find their polling places, they didn't know exactly where they were to go or when they were to go. And therefore, the League strongly urges you to join the Senate in passing Senate Bill 162 and moving the bill forward with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative Thatcher.
You mentioned under the old style, I'll mm-hmm. refer to it, that there are delays in cross-checking. Now, mm-hmm. what kind of cross-checking are you talking about?
Well, if you remember, they couldn't, if I remember, it's been a while, that we had to be sure that people weren't voting twice, and so we had the delay and the expense of looking at both I've forgotten which one we looked at first, but we looked, I guess, at the poll books first before we counted the vote by mails, or maybe it was the other way around. But it was an expensive process. It delayed, its, in some cases, a day or so because it went on and on because there was confusion. So And let me also say, one of the things that I've noticed when we were voting at polling places is you really didn't know, although I swore that I was who I said I was and wrote a name, you didn't really know for sure that that was me. And unless somebody raised the issue, they wouldn't check my signature to be sure that indeed I was Eleanor Mulder.
Follow up?
Yes. You mentioned it's not to check to make sure people didn't vote twice. Is there sort of check in place now that would ensure?
Well,
that?
My understanding is that that will eventually happen. I am not a voting expert. Annette Newingham is here, and she can answer that question far better than I can.
Great. Thank you so much for
welcome.
For being here today and taking the time to testify. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 162. Are there any further testifiers on 162? Please come forward. You can state your name for the record.
Yes. Chair Kitz, members of the committee, my name for the record, my name is Jason Leone, excuse me, with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And we are adamantly in support of House Bill 162. I believe many here sort of are hearkening back to the nostalgic days of walking to your local elementary school or high school, and that sense of community of voting is a very important thing for the community. But what we've seen since 1996 with the special when vote by mail was instituted in Oregon is an increasingly number of Oregonians actually participating in the election. And one thing that I want to point out in my testimony today in favor of this bill is that in the polling place model of voting, it really doesn't take into account folks that have to work in the evenings on election day or that work swing shift or graveyard. Those folks are disenfranchised from the process, basically suppressing their ability to vote. Now, you know, a gentleman before me, you know, was saying that it is everybody's civic responsibility, and yes, that's absolutely true. And our organization and myself personally feel that vote by mail optimizes an individual's ability to have their voice be heard, given the long window for the GOTV period for that time for that individual to actually get their vote in. And as far as polling place disenfranchisement, we have not seen that in our state as you have in other states around the country. So I just want to add my organization's voice in support of Senate Bill 162.
Thank you so much for doing so. Are there any questions? Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Isn't it true that the percentage of voter participation just increased slightly and then actually flattened out over a period of time?
No, we have not had 86.48% voter participation history in our state.
No, but prior to the last presidential election.
Prior to? I believe in the 2000 election we had higher participation than in the previous 92 presidential election. So, you know, I don't have the specific facts on that, but I do know that this new number of participation in this last presidential election was the highest in the state.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Foley.
Thank you. I was just going to suggest that Representative Thatcher and Representative Farr have asked questions that we have. John Limbeck from the Secretary of State's office could probably answer those questions, or Annette Newingham with Lane County Elections that could answer their questions more specifically, probably, if you would allow them to or wish them to.
Thank you. I see both those people in the audience.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. At this time, I see no one else for Senate Bill 162. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 162. At this time, we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2551. Clerk will read the summary.
House Bill 2551 prohibits opening of return identification and secrecy ballots in elections conducted by mail until 8:30 a.m. Prohibits ballot drop sites established by persons other than election officials.
Thank you. This time we'll call up Mrs. Janet Calvert.
Welcome to Eugene. My name is Janet Calvert, and I'm speaking as president of the League of Women Voters of Lane County. I'm speaking in opposition to House Bill 2551. Our state president, Margaret Knoll, has already submitted written testimony about this bill for the League. However, I would like to make some additional comments about HB 2551. A couple maxims popped into my mind when I read the bill. The first one was haste makes waste. Our democracy is based on the fact that each person is entitled to a vote and that it be counted and it be counted accurately. Everyone knows that when people are under pressure, a deadline, mistakes do happen. Well-trained election workers who can review ballot signatures carefully and check and double-check are basic element to a clean election, be it Oregon's vote by mail or the increasingly popular absentee ballots throughout the nation. It simply doesn't make sense to place this unnecessary short time frame and pressure for election results on the election staff. I do not think that citizens are well served by this proposal. If it's not broken, don't fix it. Requiring ballot drop sites to be staffed 24 hours, 7 days a week for the duration of the election period is expensive and simply not necessary. HB 2551 is simply a bad solution to a non-existent problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next, I'd like to call Donna Elder, please. Donna, are you for or against this bill?
I'm against.
Okay. Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Donna Elder. I live in Eugene. I am employed, or I work during the elections, and I have worked at the election board in the back room for about the past 6 years. And what I want to say is I would like you all to be aware of the care and concern that we use when we handle the ballots. We all take a lot of pride in what we're doing, and while our job isn't very glamorous, we know it's very important. And if I think I'm speaking for the other several hundred people that work with me, it's a great group, and we're very careful. And if people are concerned about errors, I think this last election, which was a very high percentage turnout, was probably the smoothest election I have ever been part of. And it was just really, it was thrilling to be part of it. And I think Annette has done a super job. That's all.
Thank you. I would agree with a large part of that. Representative March.
Thank you. And just wanted to clarify, you're not a permanent employee of elections.
No, I
you're
just
one
work
of,
during elections.
Just during the elections. Mm-hmm. And there are members of both parties that work
absolutely.
At that time.
All yeah. the time. And we know going for to pick up the ballot, say, at a box, it's always a Republican and a Democrat or two parties.
Thank you.
Yes, I got one question actually.
Oh, excuse me.
When the ballots were prepared to be fed into the machine ahead of time, and they were put in a box, I'm assuming maybe you did it similar to
be counted. Do you mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yet to be counted. Was there a seal put on that box?
I don't. Annette could probably answer that. I don't take part in that. I just do the more mundane tasks.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Thank you. I would be curious at some point to maybe hear how they do it down here in Eugene, just for a comparison basis in terms of following along the vice chair's question about how they process the ballots once they're open.
Any clerk want to come forward and
thank you.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections Clerk. And the questions, from what I understand, you want to know what happens at the point that we open ballots and we start sorting that process.
Chair, maybe we can talk about the whole process. You know, just walk us through all the steps.
From filling out the ballot? Or?
Yes.
There's a lot to...
From filling out the ballot.
I was born...
No.
Where are you going with this?
In the beginning.
It's only a two-hour committee.
On the sixth day, the ballot was printed, yes.
And on the eighth day.
Right.
Please, go ahead, I guess, from the very beginning.
Yes, once I decide to drop it off, if I may, Mr. Chair, once I decide to drop it off and it's received by your office.
I'll try to do this quickly. If I lose you, slow me down. From the time the ballots come back, the first thing that we do is we check to make sure that there's a signature on the envelope so that we can hurry and get them back to the voters if they have not properly signed them because the ballot can't be counted. They're then scanned. We use in Lane County a little Wanda unit that scans the barcode that just it's a method where they're put in half trays and they're uploaded to our voter registration system, which at that point says a ballot has been received by this voter. That's the method to ensure that people don't vote more than one time. An activity cannot be given more than one time. If another ballot did come back, it would kick out and say already voted, and we would research it and pull the original ballot and send them to the state or all the investigation that we need to do. Once the activity is given, it's then the signatures are viewed. We view the signatures on them, and we have a lot of extra help staff. Sometimes there'll be newer staff. They're instructed to go through a process where if it just doesn't match, they just pull it out. They don't spend a lot of time looking at it. If it's a match or it's not, and they just pull it out. After that point in time, if it's any that do not match, then it goes to a signature, more experienced staff that does it year after year and analyzes it in a more depth. After the ballots are sent, the ones that are good, they're sent to the back room. We keep them in batch order. Most counties will do it in precinct order. We have the option to do it both ways. And when they're done that way, they're kept in half trays. We can tell that those ballots are not open. At the point that we can open the ballots, we have them slid open, and they're kept in a certain type of container. Donna is one of her jobs is to assign. They actually sign out what teams, because they work in teams of opposite party affiliation. They sign out for those. And keep track when it goes out, when it comes back in, that they're complete. They do the process of just opening and separating the envelopes because that's the point of the secrecy issue. So the point that we process ballots, we don't know which envelope it really came out of. They make sure the teams that they're not multiples. There's very detailed instructions what they're supposed to do if there's exceptions to things. Once that process goes, they're put into a different kind of box. They actually separate then the ballots from the secrecy envelopes, and they're put in a special box. The box is different than the half trays. That way we know what point that process has gone, that hasn't been pre-inspected. It's just been opened. They don't do the pre-inspection. They just do the separation part of it. Then we have a different kind of box when they actually go through the pre-inspection process, and they're also teams of opposite party affiliation. And those go into a different box that's marked differently so that we know the difference between one and the other. Every stage, we have very clear identifiers so that we know and they are stored in different parts of our back room. Anybody is always welcome to watch us through that process. If there's any problems with the ballots, problems, we're talking about people not necessarily following instructions, circling the yes and no instead of marking the arrow because we use arrows in our county. For example, those are all set aside for, we have special teams that have a great deal of experience reviewing those ballots and determining the voter intent and then going through the process of duplication. And we keep audit trails of everything that is done with ballots if there are duplications and stuff so we can reconstruct where we came from if we had a recount. And then at the point that they go into it, the last box is a box that we can tell, it has the batch number. The batch number follows everything all the way through. They go to, or I want to kind of step back and say our back room is locked. It's a lock that is only a few people have the lock. Not even our janitors have locks to those that back room. So though there's no access to the ballots, even though they're not sealed individually, the room is secure, and it's as secure as if we had them after we count the ballots. We also keep them in a special locked container in a room that only certain people have keys. I have a key, and the supervisor, just management, is the only ones that have the keys. And then we take them to the back downstairs for ballot counting, and our ballot counting room also is specially locked, and there is not access by the janitors even. And we keep the ballots there. When we're through counting, they go into a security ballot counting room. This is a very quick brush. I'm sorry, but the details are much more in-depth than that, and I feel this doesn't do it complete justice, but I hope that gave you kind of a picture.
Nick, can you repeat that real quick?
You want me to? No.
I'm just joking. Representative Greenlee.
You won them in, and they're identified at that point and by precinct, so... Mm-hmm. You have, on the one hand, the input. When you count them, do you ever counter-check the number that have gone in with the number that are ultimately counted?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, the actual counting process, this is rather interesting because you go through a process where you have a batch that starts out from the very beginning, when you actually scan them in to give activity that the voters have come, you might have some that you have individual problems for whatever reason, and that you pull out. So the count will start changing. You will pull out ballots that you have where you don't accept the signatures. So again, that count, you have your original count, you have your end count, and that continues somewhat to change. But we keep track of all of those ballots. There's another report, and we actually reconcile that to make sure that all the ones that we pulled out are all accounted for at all points, because you have to do that. There's a lot of detail to this particular thing. At one point, when I first started to optical scan, I had them count every ballot at the front end, and then we would do the ballot counting and match the totals. Well, we sort of chased our tails on that, and I have to tell you that we quit doing it after I did it the majority of the day. And the reason why is because humans have a hard time counting accurately. Every time what would happen is we would stop, we would pull those aside, we would hand count them again, and we would find out that the machine count was totally accurate and the human counts were wrong.
If I can follow, though, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
But the issue isn't the hand or the human. The issue is you want them in so you have an electronic form. You know how many ballots went in, say, by each precinct. And then you have a machine tally that gives you a number by precinct. And then you have a set of ballots that you know didn't get into that final thing. But I was asking, do you reconcile those numbers?
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about
before every certification process, I run all the ballots that are counted, and actually physically counted by precinct, and then I run reports of those voter activities, because remember, we gave activity to the voters, and even the voters that we're not counting the ballots, we have voter activity, and we reconcile those precinct by precinct to make sure that what came in was either counted, or for some reason, if it wasn't counted, that they're accounted for.
Thank you.
Thank you. One quick question that comes to mind: when this onslaught of ballots come in, rough idea, what percentage either require a verification of a signature because it doesn't match, or don't have a signature from the very beginning? Any rough estimate of what percentage of the ballots cast fall into those two categories?
Chair Kitts, I can't say that I have that on the top of my head. It is a very small percentage. We counted in Lane County over 186,000 ballots.
as far as with no signature at all, we're returning those back to the voters or contacting them by phone, making every attempt to get hold of them so that they can go ahead and still cast their ballot. We feel it's quite important to try to help people through the process. And so that number changes because we might have it, and then they come back and they do take care of that. As far as those that don't match, let's say we had a couple hundred, and if you think of 186,000, it's a very small percentage.
So, fair to say a couple hundred, then we're not in the thousands, or
it's not nowhere in the thousands. No, not the end product.
I'm going to follow up. if in fact it appears that you put more emphasis, just in listening to you, if I'm wrong, please correct me. More emphasis on those that did not sign the outside of it. The ballot versus those where the signature doesn't match, or is equal emphasis placed on both those to determine the voter?
Chair Kitts, there is no way we put more emphasis on one versus the other. We hired up to 200 and almost 250 extra help employees at this last general election. And anybody who went into my office, we have a large space. We went from 7,000 to 15,000. There wasn't an inch that wasn't being used. A lot of integrity. All of the people know what they're supposed to be doing. You have to feed all the animals is one of my favorite sayings. You cannot just put all your emphasis on one thing. You have to be sure that you're paying attention to all the details.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Just a real quick question. With the unmatched signatures, did you also try to get a hold of those people just in case there maybe was a physical problem, maybe they couldn't sign the same way?
Yeah, Chair Kitts, Representative Thatcher, yes, absolutely. We are required by law to contact. What we do is when the signature doesn't match, Lane County is a very large county. We don't try to call them. We actually send a letter out to them, and they have up to 10 days after the election to try to resolve the issue. So if it was somebody whose signature had changed because they had broken their arm, for instance, or they were just older and had some illness that caused it to be shaky, they could still resolve it to prove that that was their ballot signature.
Thank you. Final question, Representative Dalto.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if this is a little tangential question, but I do have a curiosity. You have individuals that are checking very carefully the signatures that are matching. Right now, my understanding is that the elector information is public record. So, for example, if I call your office and I say, I'd like to get some information on Debbie Farr, Representative Debbie Farr, but I call Debbie Farr, can you give me her date of birth? Can you give me her party affiliation? Can you give me her home address? Can you give me a phone number? Can you give me, you know, all the information that is available? And that's a public record, and I think that you do give that information out, at least they do in Marion County, and I suppose they do here as well, including which of the elections Representative Farr has voted in the last few elections. So it's a lot of personal information. And then to add the component layer of the signature, obviously, you know, the public doesn't have access to the signatures, but I'm just kind of wondering if you have any thoughts about that level of public information, the signatures, and the people who are actually comparing the signatures, given the issue of identity theft being as increasingly prevalent.
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I'm not sure where the concern would be. If you're concerned that the staff have access to the signatures and would somehow misuse it, I think that you'd have to take this a little bit further and then say that when we conduct elections, we're doing quite an important job. We're doing more than just looking at signatures that are quite private to individuals, but also we're counting their ballots, which I think is a high level of responsibility. They all take an oath. All the people that work in my office take an oath, and including all the offices throughout the state. And if you remember the testimony from one of the people that worked for me, that is absolutely true. There is a high level of integrity, and we wouldn't hire people if they didn't have that kind of integrity.
Yeah, but lots of people take oaths and then break the law after they take oaths. So my question is, who has access to the signatures, and how are the signatures sort of protected as personal information? Because with all the information that I described that's available, I mean, that's that's a tremendous amount of personal information that a person can then use and try to do something negative with that information. The only thing that's missing is a Social Security number, which you don't collect. But
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, certainly in any circumstance where a job, whether you're a bank teller or you're responsible for signatures, if there was someone who broke the law, we would prosecute them to the highest degree. It's like all things. Yes, somebody probably could do it, but there is a process for hiring people, and we have people crawling over each other. It would be very difficult in any circumstance in processing ballots, looking at signatures, to not notice someone doing something like that. We're really pretty busy. I really encourage you to visit our offices when we're in the middle of an election, and you might realize how difficult it would be to do something like that. I respectfully say that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just one final. And so,
go ahead and follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. Appreciate it. So just on the issue of the signatures, I just want to get final clarification. You don't have volunteers looking even at the initial stage of your triaging, not triaging, but your initial processing of the ballots. You don't have volunteers looking at the signatures?
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, all the employees that work for us, including when we had the poll elections, they were truly paid employees. They're extra help employees that are paid a wage. We don't have volunteers. Truly, they don't get paid very well, so volunteers is, in a way, true.
Sure. Sure. Kind of like the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
I do have...
Representative Thatcher, I am sorry. I said that Representative Dalto was going to have the last question, and he took the last five. So we will be moving on at this time. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. At this time, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2551.
Representative Dalto owes you a couple of questions, Representative Thatcher.
Can I yield my questions to Representative Thatcher? Or do I have to get to the next level before I do that?
I would recommend you be careful in the yielding of questions. At this time, we will go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2583. Since it appears we have no one in favor of House Bill 2583, I won't need to alternate back and forth. If anybody wishes to step into that fire of being for House Bill 2583, signal to the chair, and I am more than happy to give you your time. What we've done in the past, we divided it up based on the number of people that we have to testify and the time that we have. So that's why I keep looking at my watch. I don't mean to be like George Bush Sr. and act like I have someplace better to be, because I don't. It appears we have about 10 minutes per testifier, so if you don't choose to use your whole 10 minutes...
Tell me a question.
Please.
That's fine. In fact, I think what I'll do is, in the past, we'll try to limit it to about 5 minutes per testimony. It shouldn't take longer than that if the testimony is all. That way we'll have a buffer at the end of the committee where if the committee has anything else they'd like to discuss or there's any other issues that you, the public, would like to come forward with that's not related to the three bills that we've testified on here today, it'll give you that opportunity. So with that being said, I'd like to call forward Joy. Joy. VC. The clerk will, before you testify, the clerk will read the, my administrator, I'm sorry, not my clerk. My clerk is there. Will read the bill summary, please. Thank you.
House Bill 2583 requires evidence of citizenship for individuals registering to vote for the first time in Oregon. Declares an emergency to be effective on passage.
Thank you, Administrator Moore. Please, for the record, will you state your name?
For the record, my name is Joy Vesey. I am a student at Lane Community College. I was born and raised here in Springfield, Oregon. And I am currently an intern with the Oregon Student Association. As a student and an Oregon voter, I come before you this evening in opposition of House Bill 2583. Campus-based voter registration drives are a key element of the democratic process. These registration drives have had a huge impact at reversing trends of voter apathy among Oregon students. In 2004, a nonpartisan student-led voter registration drive in Oregon registered over 33,000 students to vote on college campuses. House Bill 2583 would create new barriers for students to register to vote. This bill not only would decrease the number of student voters in Oregon, it would have a direct and damaging effect on students' ability to register to vote and participate in all levels of Oregon's electoral process. The new regulations proposed under House Bill 2583 will have a negative effect on students. Not only do a large number of Oregon students not carry around proof of citizenship, most fall in low-income brackets and do not have the financial resources to access a new passport or birth certificate. By adding excessive, unnecessary regulations on voter registration drives, this bill would effectively deny students the right to vote. The Federal Voters' Rights Act states the right of citizens of the United States to vote is a fundamental right. It is the duty of the federal, state, and local governments to promote the exercise of the fundamental right to vote. Discriminatory and unfair registration laws and procedures can have a direct and damaging effect on voter registration, voter participation in elections for federal office, and disproportionately harm voter participation by various groups, including racial minorities. House Bill 2583 will be expensive to enforce. This legislation would create an unnecessary state bureaucracy that would take needed funding away from other state programs such as education and public safety. We should be focusing on methods in our state to promote more Oregonians to become involved in the political process. The new barriers created by House Bill 2583 would result in the complete opposite. On behalf of Oregon students, please do not support House Bill 2583. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Joy. You mentioned that for students it would be difficult because they usually don't have proof of citizenship.
Yes.
But if they are a citizen, wouldn't they have a Social Security card?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, possibly, but I recall even back to high school never having access to my Social Security card. In fact, my parents always kept it for safekeeping so that if I were to lose it, somebody else could not use it for intents and purposes. And proof of citizenship is something that is very, very sensitive. It's not something you want to have in your backpack or in your wallet walking around. If you're touring in Europe, you don't carry your passport around with you. It's dangerous. So to carry it around or to ask students to have it access to it at all times is, in effect, almost increasing the possibility of identity theft, I think. I don't think that it's very safe.
May I follow up?
You may.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're careful with your Social Security card. I happen to have my children's Social Security cards, too, and their passport.
Yes.
But they are accessible. And if they needed their passport or their Social Security card, I would be able to supply them with it so that they could prove their citizenship.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, the only problem with that is that not all students in Oregon are from Oregon. And so getting access to something, say, all the way across the country, for example, last year from the beginning of school to the last day to register to vote, there were only 12 school days for the student-led registration drive. And it would be very possible that if it was difficult to track down or if there was a long period of time involved or, like I said, even money, if they didn't have, suppose they were an orphan, if they didn't have parents and they had to do it themselves, $50 or $150 for a passport is a lot of money for a student. We're already struggling as it is, and to force us in a way, if necessary, to pay to register to vote, I don't feel that it's the right thing to do.
And you wouldn't want to ask your parents to mail those items?
I would if you could get a hold of the parents, yes.
Hey, Mr. Chair, it wasn't a problem for me when I was a freshman at Willamette, and my mother called me and said we're going to Argentina, and she sent me the information so that I could go get my own passport and stuff. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem to be a huge problem. Didn't seem to be a huge problem for me to carry my passport either when I was in Europe last year, in case I was arrested or something like that. I'd like to be able to prove my identity. So I don't know where you're coming from on that.
Well, Chair Kitts, if I may respond, Representative Dalto. I personally...
Don't promote him. He's less trouble as a representative.
I personally, I have worked the entire way through school. I'm still only in my sophomore year, and I'm 27 years old, because I get no support from my parents. I have one parent that is unemployed for 14 years, and my father lives in Portland. And actually, he has supported me a little bit in the last couple years, but frankly, doing it on my own has been my only choice. And I feel that that's probably very similar for a lot of students, especially at my school, at Lane Community College.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Please.
and so it sounds to me like you're a pretty independent person, and an independent person like you who can handle a variety of different situations could probably access your information pretty easily.
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I would hope so. But, again, there are many possible things to get in the way, and that is one less vote, and to me, one less vote is equivalent to a million less votes.
Thank you very much. I can speak for one of the members on this committee. They are still paying student loans, so I do understand the financial. Two of the members on this committee. Three.
Three.
Actually, two members and an administrator. Joy, I
paying for a CV.
I do have one question for you. The ability for one to get their birth certificate to prove a citizenship in this country is about $18. And I don't think the bill is requiring people to carry that information around with them, you know, at like a spot check, you know, get in your backpack, let me see, you know, who are you? I don't think it's trying to get at you like that. But I think that what the bill is trying to do, just for clarification, is to say that upon the first time that you register to vote, that you need to prove that you are a U.S. citizen. So I just wanted to clarify that.
If I may respond.
You may respond. I'm not stopping you.
Chair Kitts, one of my main arguments here in what I was saying was that voter registration drives are essential to voting for students. Student apathy, I mean, that's a very general stereotype. We all consider students to be apathetic. And I work at the U of O bookstore. I've worked there for 4 years, and I have met many apathetic students there and at Lane Community College, of course. But a voter registration drive gets people involved in not only the process, obviously, of being registered to vote, but seeing everyone else that is going to be in the future involved in the process of voting, which I believe, just as someone said earlier, is our duty. So $18 or $50, which I actually paid several years ago for my copy, and my mother had to come in with me and sign, any amount of money to me implies some sort of tax. I feel that, this is my personal view, I don't know, I feel that if you check that box, you are, it's almost like an oath, but with this signature and this check, I'm swearing that I'm a citizen, and I feel that that is enough.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come here and be here. I really appreciate that, and I think yes. It shows great involvement, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
At this time, I will call forward Adam Petcom. It's got to be close.
Close. Chair Kitts, member of the committee, my name is Adam Petcom, with an N actually in my handwriting. Isn't very good.
I'm not taking responsibility for that one.
It asks that I write my name legibly, but that's a tall order for me. Anyway, I am Adam Petkin, and I am board chair for the Oregon Student Association and president of the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. OSA represents over 100,000 students statewide. I'm here to testify today in opposition to House Bill 2583. Prior to the 2004 election, as you've already heard, OSA embarked on its most successful nonpartisan voter registration drive ever, as students registered over 33,000 of their peers on campuses across the state. On my campus alone, we registered 7,669 students, including 1,000 on the last day.
Wow.
I mentioned the registration effort on the last day, actually, to emphasize how this legislation would impact students' ability to register to vote and to participate in the democratic process, and I'll get back to that in a second. Class of the University of Oregon and institutions across the state begin approximately 2 weeks prior to the voter registration deadline for a November election. Intensive campus-based voter registration drives are crucial to engaging youth in the political process and helping them clear a lifelong obstacle to life, or sorry, the first obstacle to lifelong participation. Each fall, students work tirelessly to contact their peers in class and on the street in order to help them register to vote. The restriction outlined in 2583 requiring proof of citizenship would hinder these registration efforts. Students, as we've mentioned before, are very unlikely to carry proof of registration or proof of citizenship with them on campus. Instead, these vital records are often kept at home. Students on my campus from Baker City or Merle Point would be hard-pressed to acquire proof of citizenship in time to register to vote before the deadline. And again, I mentioned the 1,000 students that we registered on the last day. Those 1,000 students probably wouldn't know prior to that day that they needed proof of citizenship, and so they would have a hard time in that day acquiring their birth certificate or passport. I personally can also speak to the time it takes and the cost. A couple months ago, actually needed to acquire a different version of my LA County birth certificate. I swear I'm an Oregonian at heart, though. I've been here almost since I was born. But it actually took me about a month to acquire the passport, and to rush it, to get it in a month, it cost over $40. And I was also able to actually have a notary do it for free, so it would have cost more had I had to pay the notary. So I really believe that, especially as so many students register on the last day, it would be very hard for students to be able to get their proof of citizenship before the election and before the deadline to register to vote. House Bill 2583's requirement to provide citizenship for first-time registrants would tell many of these students that despite their best efforts to play by the rules, it is too late to register and vote in the next election. This bill would effectively disenfranchise thousands of Oregonians and decimate efforts to bring Oregon's future into the electorate. Please oppose House Bill 2583.
Adam, thank you very much. Did you say that you're the student body president?
The official title is Associate Students of the University of Oregon, but the ACO. But it's the student government.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a great honor for you. Are there any questions? Thank you so much.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Yeah. Adam, where are you from?
I went to high school at Beaverton High School in Beaverton, and I actually live in North Portland now, though.
Great. You know where your birth certificate is?
My birth certificate now is actually in my apartment because I just actually traveled to Mexico over break and needed to acquire a new version of my passport. But it was in Portland before. And I actually went through a lengthy process to get the current version because the original version that my mother had is now outdated. LA County no longer uses that birth certificate. And so for it to be valid, I had to go through a very lengthy process of acquiring the one that my mom had and then finding out that one was no longer valid and calling LA County and faxing a notarized form down to them and then having them send it up to me $40 later.
But you have your certificate.
Follow up.
I have it now, unlike most students.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll call forward Amy Dufour.
Yes. Representative Kitts and committee members. My name is Amy Dufour, and I'm a registered voter and student at the University of Oregon. I am here in opposition of House Bill 2583. I am the State Affairs Coordinator for the Associated Students of the University of Oregon, our student government, and last fall I helped coordinate the largest campus-based voter registration drive in the history of the University of Oregon and the state. The statewide nonpartisan coalition, the Student Vote Coalition, registered over 33,000 students across the state, and 7,669 of those students were at our campus alone. This would not have been possible if every time we had to register a student to vote, they had to have their birth certificate or passport. This is not something that students, or anyone, carries around with them. Passing this bill would have a detrimental effect to voter registration drives and to getting new people to vote.
Mr. Chair, did you say you were in favor of this?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chicken.
It could lead to fewer citizens actually voting.
That's what I heard.
No.
Excuse me.
The state of Oregon consistently has one of the highest voter turnouts in the country, and this past election was no different. 87% of registered voters voted. Lane County had the highest voter turnout we have ever seen, with a turnout of over 91% of registered voters.
Wow.
The student-heavy precincts, the people that we registered, also turned out in higher numbers than ever before. We should be doing whatever we can to maintain this. The other issue is that most young people are registered through voter registration drives as they move frequently and need to re-register frequently. For student drives, this usually consists of hundreds of hours on campus, in the dorms, at their homes, and in classes. While we did knock on over 1,000 doors here in Eugene, most of the people we registered were on campus or at events, places that people don't normally carry a passport or birth certificate. Knowing this, House Bill 2583 would make it virtually impossible for voter registration drives to be successful. If we want to continue to bring in new voters, we cannot create more barriers. You should be doing whatever you can to encourage participation in the democratic process, not discouraging it. I urge you to please not pass this bill through. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate that. Do you have another copy of your testimony, or you're speaking so fast, I just want to make sure that it's all right. We get it. It's just hard to for everything else. Thank you again.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Quick question, if I may.
I won't
trouble anybody else with this. Amy, do you know where your birth certificate is?
Yes, it's in a bank in Southern California.
Okay. Do you have access to it?
I imagine my parents. Yeah, my parents have the key.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm going to call at this time Jason Leon. I apologize. I should have called you first since you've been over 100 miles. It's kind of the courtesy of the committee. So at this time, I'm going to skip Ron Craig and come right back to Ron. So I apologize for going out of order.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Leon with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. First of all, I know that this committee has already heard testimony at your public hearing in North Plains, and I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to add to the public record today. AFSCME Council 75 represents over 21,000 public employees at the state and local county and level, including several hundred election staff in Umatilla County, Lane County, as well as Multnomah County. So our folks really are on the front line of processing ballots and dealing with elections issues. AFSCME Council 75 is adding our voice to the strong opposition from Oregonians to House Bill 2583. You've heard testimony against this bill from our Secretary of State, Annette Newingham, with the Association of County Clerks, individual county clerks, activists, and other individuals, Portland State University, and other nonpartisan organizations. All have raised serious concerns about the need for this bill, as well as its administrative practicality, and our organization shares these concerns. If enacted, this bill would seriously impede an individual or organization's ability to conduct a nonpartisan voter registration drive. It's unclear in the language of the bill if the person or organization doing the voter registration drive needs to obtain a copy of the registrant's birth certificate, passport, or I guess naturalization card as well. And again, I'd like to sort of hearken to a comment made by Representative Dalto that with identity theft on the rise in our state and our nation, it seems like limiting people's access to that kind of information is probably a good thing. And, you know, the other thing that I would like to maybe point out for the record, and hopefully this would clarify a question that arose from Representative Farr, is that from 2000 to 2002, I was an aide to Congresswoman Darlene Hooley, working primarily on immigration issues. And part of the naturalization and legal permanent resident status that individuals would apply for is once you were granted the status of a legal permanent resident, you were then issued a Social Security number and a Social Security card, and that was a very coveted thing for individuals to get, as it, you know, was the gateway to, you know, getting home loans, car loans, you know, that kind of thing. And so I don't know, with the sort of the folding of the tent of the INS and the new creation of the BCIS after September 11th of 2000, if that has that practice has changed. But I think that may be something that this committee may want to look at on the federal level, if that's still the case with immigration law. Back to you know, my testimony here is that we feel that any assertion that undocumented Oregonians are, you know, registering to vote is inaccurate, and it's not a very good message to be sending to the public. You've heard testimony from the Secretary of State that I believe it is that there is no evidence of widespread attempts by non-citizens to register and vote in our state. And Oregon's penalty, as you know, for falsely registering to vote, it's a Class C penalty, and it's very clearly highlighted on the right below the signature line on the voter registration card that the penalty for falsely registering to vote, it's a Class C penalty, it's a $100,000 fine, and the maximum would be 5 years in prison. I mean, it's pretty clear. And then it's also clear now that the ballots are available in Spanish as well as English. So as well as the Secretary of State providing voting in Oregon a great guide to potential voters in our state. At best, this bill adds unnecessary and costly layers of bureaucracy to Oregonians and to the election staffs. And I'll echo what someone else who testified here said, that we should be making it easier for citizens to vote. And the other thing that our organization is very concerned about, you know, you may have heard in the North Plains hearings, people's express their opinion that voting is a privilege and not a right. Our organization would vehemently fight against that belief, and our organization would side with the United States Supreme Court that voting is indeed a right of citizens. Driving's a privilege, voting's a right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that our organization, you know, gets very upset at any attempts to limit Oregonians' abilities to vote. And, you know, this could be tantamount to harkening back to Jim Crow laws, when you had poll taxes, you had literacy tests for people to register to vote and to exercise their ability to vote. And our organization would be opposed to any legislation that would inhibit an ability of a citizen's right to vote.
Thank you, Jason. I would agree with you that it is a right to vote for every U.S. citizen.
Thank you.
Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Leon, your quote was that we should be making things easier to vote for folks. I'm just wondering about your assessment of the ease of the voting process as it is right now. It's pretty easy, isn't it?
I think, Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I believe right now it is extremely user-friendly for citizens of Oregon and citizens of this country and citizens of Oregon.
So, may I follow up?
Follow up.
So is there anything we could do to make it even easier?
I think that following the Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I think that Oregon and the Secretary of State have been forward-thinking in developing bilingual voting material, even though, according to the 1964 Voting Rights Act, you have to, in order to make it state law to develop that material, you have to have a certain percentage of the population eligible to register to vote that needs information in another language. Even though Oregon does not meet that threshold, our Secretary of State has taken that step. And I think that another forward-thinking step that this committee could make a recommendation on is that other languages are included in the registration process. Currently, you know, in the Vietnamese community, for example, there are 5 different dialects that are spoken. And, you know, if there's a starting place to make it easier for Asian Americans to access voting and voting information in the state, I think that would be important, as there is a growing community in our state. That would be one recommendation.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Ron Craig. Ron, not here? This time, I'd just like to take a pause and acknowledge a good friend of mine that just showed up. State Senator Floyd Prusansky has joined us in the back. So thank you very much for coming, Floyd. It's great to have you here. Skipping Ron, Cappy Eaton. Welcome, Cappy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's nice to see you in Eugene rather than in Salem. I am speaking for the League of Women Voters this evening.
Please put it back this way. It will pick you up, ma'am.
This way.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I don't boom you out.
You don't have to move around.
All right, thank you. The written testimony is in your files. It was submitted last week by our state president, but she did not have an opportunity to put it on the record. But before I make a couple of comments, a colleague of mine asked me to, on her behalf, sort of follow up what Mr. Leone had to say about the voting the registration problems for people in the South. She grew up in South Carolina, and she said she witnessed firsthand all of the barriers that were put in front of people trying to register to vote. And she wanted to make sure that the process in Oregon, which she finds very user-friendly, and I use that as others have, not be somehow changed by this requirement. And she asked me, and I am happy on her behalf, to present her opposition to this bill because of not wanting to disenfranchise any kind of people because they can't do the registration process. Just a couple of points. I sit on the HAVA steering committee, and we have had discussions about what is required under the new Help America Vote Act with regards to registration. And actually, registration is very simple. If you are going to use our registration by mail, what you have to send in is something that shows who you are, a bank statement with your name and address on it, a rent receipt with your name and address on it, a copy of your driver's license. Those are the things that you can use to identify yourself when you are registering by mail. There is no requirement in HAVA.
Kathy, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second.
Yep.
I have the actual registration form here, and
right.
There's been some, you just listed a few of the things that are required. One of the things that's required, or not required, but could suffice, is a government document. What does that mean?
Well, a driver's license is a government document.
Can I see that? This letter from the Yamhill County Clerk on the official letterhead is a government document. It states, for the record, it states their name, their address, which is the two things that are required for identification on a government document. Now, this particular government document is the government document that's sent out to those that failed to register properly. So in theory, couldn't someone take this government document, because it just says a government document with your name and address on it, fold it up, and mail it back and say, there's my proof, my official government document with my name and address on it.
And they have signed a voter registration card with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then if that's not true, they can be fined up to $100,000 and go to prison for 5 years. That's the law. It says very clearly on that voter registration form, you attest to the fact that you are a citizen, you are 18 years of age, and if you vote, if you send your form in by mail, then you have to show not just what you've got there, you must show a receipt to you with your name and address on it, or a bank statement with your name and address on it, or your driver's license with your name on it, along with that registration form.
But it just says a government document.
Well, there are certain documents that are considered to be proof of your identity.
Yes.
I would ask Annette if she would, if what Representative Kitts is suggesting, Ms. Newingham, would that be considered by you?
We've never had anybody ever submit something like that.
Yep. And then you want to come forward? I'm going to follow up with my question, if that's all right, then you'll be next.
Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections Chief. Government documents that you would get would be, like, for instance, it could be somebody who is working through an agency, And getting some kind of agency assistance, and that person is, providing, like maybe it's their benefits that is being stated in it that they received at that address. That would be an example of something like that. We certainly would require. I've never received one back from something I've sent them that they're trying to even use. That's news to me. I would want to ask you: do you believe that somebody is doing that? Is it in the clerks?
I try not to let my position. Oh. I'm not taking a position. I'm just stating that there, in reading this and doing a little bit of research. It's a very vague. It says a government document. It doesn't quantify what that means. It doesn't list a myriad of examples. It just says a government document, and that's all it says. I mean, in theory, I could take my letterhead, say "Happy Birthday, Annette," sign it, Derek Kitts. That's an official government document.
What?
Addressed to you, which would, by my reading of this under HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, would suffice. And if that's the case, I think that's something the committee may need to look at to define exactly what a government document is. And that's why I bring this up. I was hoping somebody would bring it up. Kathy, you just happened to be the lucky one that got to bring it up. And I happened to be doing some research on that. So that is a because the problem is, as I see it, if in fact you say a government document, somebody submits that government document, and you say, no, that's not good enough. Now you're starting to be an impediment to people being able to register to vote because it's not clearly defined. But on the flip side of that, I think there's an open door there that could allow for potential for fraud in this situation. Because if you're sending it back, that's not a good enough official government document, but that's not what it says. So that's my question to you, is if somebody, in fact, took that official document, stuffed it in this, and sent it to you, wouldn't you kind of be obligated to say, well, that isn't a government document, and they did fulfill what the requirements are, so I guess it's... Or do you as a county clerk have a little bit of leeway in that situation?
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, the Association of County Clerks works very closely with Secretary of State's office, and when this federal legislation was enacted, one of the things that was done was to analyze and determine what those requirements were and how we could uniformly follow them. And one of those steps was also when we have situations where they're unclear, we oftentimes seek assistance from the Secretary of State's office, who in turn has gone to the Attorney General's office to obtain some clarification on how we should be interpreting that. It's like any law, really, for that matter. So certainly if somebody challenged us, because I do not know of any clerk that would accept such a letter as evidence of a government under that term, we would probably, if someone challenged it, we'd go to the Secretary of State's office and seek further guidance on that.
Okay. Thank you. I don't mean to,
no, that's,
to,
okay.
to beat a dead horse there, but it's that particular language is of grave concern to myself. Representative March?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Annette, the presumption at this point is looking at current name and address. And if you mailed a document to an address and name person at that address, that would be presumed that it went to that address, and otherwise they wouldn't have had it to show you. Just as for example, a ballot is not forwardable. So in one sense, it does prove that that person is at that address.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, yes, that is correct. We do, when we mail the letter, if it came back undeliverable, obviously we're going to take action because by our statutes, if we have evidence that the person doesn't live at a particular address, we're going to inactivate them, which will generate what we call an 8D2, which is a confirmation notice, because we're required by law to send any confirmation notice to anybody who is inactive, which is forwardable, to inform them that we inactivated them and that if we have some information wrong, we can fix that at that point in time.
We
have to notify everybody about everything.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm reading from the Oregon's Vote by Mail manual. And what it states right here, it says, if this is a new voter who registers for the first time within your county, and I don't mean to be condescending by reading you your own voter, it's for the record.
No, it's
for the first time within your county by United States Postal Service, mail, they must provide a copy of one of the following, and it goes on to say, a current utility bill, bank statement, comma, government check, comma, paycheck, comma, or other government document that show their name and address. And that's all that it says. It doesn't go on to specify what exactly constitutes a government document. So that's one of the concerns that I had, that said, okay, if I'm stuffing in something that's a government, and it's a government document with a name and address, and mail it off, it's tough to verify, you know, from that perspective. So that's the only point that I was making.
Chair Kitts, I would probably recommend that if that was the case, that certainly could be brought to the attention of the Secretary of State's office. Since this is an administrative rule, the vote by mail that we follow, and it's a dynamic document that we constantly upgrade to make sure that it gives the detail that we need to do our jobs, certainly could be brought to their attention for us to take further attention to.
I'm sure Mr. John Limbeck will give me a call on Monday.
Chair.
Representative Dalto, then Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what is that information that you do need to do your job? Because I think that really is the heart of the question. That's my first question. I mean, you know, my second question is, citizenship and voting. Voting, I think we pretty much all agree that voting is a right. But I would also say that voting is a responsibility to be an active citizen and to have value to your citizenship. And so, I mean, do you believe that voting is a responsibility too? So that's my second question.
To me?
Yes. But the first question.
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto. I don't make those judgments. I am a county clerk that is responsible to administer state law and go by the rules. When I don't, when you say, I mean, we all have to read the statutes, and when the statutes aren't clear, then we oftentimes bring bills before you to add clarity, to change the laws, to make sure that we do have the tools in order to do our job clearly. As to judgment to whether they're citizens, they sign an oath, and that has worked well for Oregon. In my experience, I have been the election official here for Lane County since 1990, and I do not recall having situations where someone has actually, I don't know that I have ever referred someone to the Secretary of State's office because they voted because they were not a U.S. citizen. I can recall one particular situation where someone notified me. It was a campaign drive, and they went to the door, and they said, came to me and said, there's these individuals who are not U.S. citizens that are registered to vote, and they're voting falsely. So I sent letters, and I challenged their registration based on that, and those individuals provided me with proof of citizenship.
If I might follow up. See, your statement is getting to the crux of my feeling about this particular bill. I'm glad that you got there. Because to me, I separate two different issues with this bill. The first issue is the information that you need to, the information that you say you need to do your job. And so what I interpret that from your testimony is that you need a name and an address. Somehow legally fitting into one of the categories on the statement. You need a name and address to do your job in the sense of doing your job as registering somebody to vote. Name and address. And the address and the name you get positively identified from one of these documents or whatever. And the other issue is the question of whether or not people who are citizens or not citizens are signing up to vote. Those are the two issues that I'm separating in my mind. So the name and address to sign somebody up to vote, and then people that aren't eligible to vote, like non-citizens signing up. Those, I'm trying to separate those two, and it's very hard to do in this particular bill, at least from my perspective. But I think I hear you saying all you need is a name and address supplied and proof by one of these legal documents that are defined in administrative rule to do your job. Is that right?
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I am not totally clear, and I would be afraid to say that I agree because I'm not really sure exactly what you're getting at. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let me make it clear.
I would like to just say, though, that This is a federal bill that we follow. This is a federal requirement, and we went by the guidelines of that, and I strongly urge you to get clarification from the Secretary of State's office if there's questions on how the interpretation of that federal bill was.
Thanks.
Thank you for answering the question. Representative Polby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annette, would it be fair to say that if somebody gave you a name and address and provided one of these pieces of listed identifications that are acceptable, and your office or you felt that that piece of identification was very questionable, that you could then turn that over to the Secretary of State or investigate this, and if found out that the person that filled this out was doing so falsely, could then be prosecuted?
Chair Kitts and Representative Hovey, yes, absolutely. Not only that, we as county clerks can actually challenge people's registration, just as I mentioned earlier. I had done so when I had was given what was a possibility of somebody being registered as a non-citizen, and I was they were able to defeat that by giving me the proof that they were indeed a citizen of the United States. And we would do that because any evidence that's given to me is treated seriously, and I'm sure all county clerks would do the same. And then I would refer to the Secretary of State if there was any evidence to that somebody was illegally registered.
Annette, thank you for your clarification. I'm going to let Kathy finish her statement.
Sure.
Annette, you might want to stay there, I have a feeling.
we may have to.
I'm sorry to open Pandora's box on you like that, but I appreciate you answering the committee's question. So, Kathy, why don't you please finish?
Well, I'm sort of following up on what Annette had to say, and that is that HAVA's requirements, and as she stated, we go by the federal law, and the federal law does not require anything more than we are requiring. And if I understand in talking with the Secretary of State's office and the elections office, this is almost a problem that has not arisen in Oregon, that it's considered that the signature on the registration card, which is an attestment that you are who you are, that you're of that age, and you are a citizen, carries with it not a insignificant penalty. And that seems to have been a deterrent, at least in our state, from people that there is somehow a conception that we have widespread numbers of people who are not citizens in this country voting. And that does not seem to be the case in Oregon. But we are following the law as it's come down from the federal government.
And also, for the record, the HAVA standards that have been sent, the Help America Vote Act standards that the federal government has set forth for the states, are only the bare minimum that must be done. The states have the ability to expound upon those bare minimum requirements as well. Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for Ms. Eaton. And so I don't disagree with you about the statement on the voter registration card that should dissuade somebody from thinking about committing an illegal act. I understand. There's no disagreement, at least in my mind, on that issue. So let's separate that then, because I don't believe that there's some grand conspiracy to get people registered to vote who shouldn't be voting. Let's separate that then. So my question to you is, do you think that it's sufficient that all somebody needs is a name and an address to be able to register to vote? Forget about the other issue. It's just the issue of a name and address to be able to exercise your right and responsibility to vote. Name and an address with one of these documents. Do you think that's enough?
If I am a person and I have put down my name and my address, and I can bring a document that says I am who I am, then yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And for the record, is that your position or is that the league's position?
This is my position, both a personal position, but also the league supports what HAVA is giving this country in terms of trying to make it easy and accessible for people to vote.
But, and I agree with that. I just...
Representative Dalto asked you a direct question, so for the record, I just want
no,
to...
No, and for the record, it's both my personal, but also speaking for the league. That's the league's position, yes.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions of either of these two very patient ladies? Thank you very much. Annette, you may want to sit on the front row.
Get some exercise.
That's right. The final testifier on House Bill 2583 is Tony Beta. I hope I didn't butcher that.
It's Beta.
Beta.
Good evening, for the record, Tony Beta, Lane County IGR manager, and I am here to testify in opposition of the bill in front of you requiring the proof of citizenship, and I'm representing County Commissioner Bill Dwyer in that regard. He has reviewed the bill and expressed his sentiments to me that he's asking me to convey to you that he believes that it would create some additional barriers and decrease access to the voting process, and would like that to be part of the record. And that concludes my testimony.
So noted, and thank you very much for showing up on behalf of the commissioner. Appreciate it. I see no further, there are no further people signed up to testify, but if there are any wishing to testify at this time, I would extend that opportunity. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2583. Committee, at this time, I'm more than happy to either adjourn the committee and take freestanding questions, or keep the committee going and have anybody come forward and testify for the record on any other issues related to elections and rules at this time. So
we should ask if the audience has any other issues.
Are there any other issues that the audience would like to bring forward to the committee?
Where do you begin?
Great. Well, at this time, I think we'll Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I said I wasn't going to speak during the hearing, and I haven't. But I did want to...
The hearing's still going.
I did want to thank the committee for meeting in Eugene and around the state to take testimony on these important matters. I think it's wonderful that you've done that and that you've allowed my friends and neighbors and Representative Holvey and Representative Farr's friends and neighbors to come here and to testify in front of the committee without having to travel to Salem. Thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. And thank you. You know, folks, we, the committee, we're traveling to Florence tomorrow to do the same venue there at 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning, to 1 o'clock. You're more than welcome to attend that committee as well. I'd like to thank the committee for their indulgence on this Friday night. They are sacrificing a lot. This is probably going to be the most active committee in the legislature as the committee or as the session winds down. We're planning 9 different trips across the state to get input on this. So greatly appreciate your input. It will be noted for the record and will be very influential in the decision-making process as we finish up these committee hearings. With that, committee's adjourned.